morning is going to last as long as it needs to for us to get the message to come into our more subtle identity so that we can, I could say we want to accompany them. We want to meet them along that transition between physical and subtle. And in that, there's no loss. There's a more, even more meaningful relationship being built. So if we can get to the subtlety of that based on the gravity of emotion bringing us down, like in a positive way, like, yes, thank you for bringing me home. That depth of subtlety is the gift. And we will feel more centered and we will feel more receptive. If we trust, which our society hasn't given us a lot of tools to trust, that the down during these moments is actually to our benefit.
Yeah,
it's tremendously helpful for us to be able to be present and to not be up into shoulds and shouldn'ts.
Welcome back to Curious Ones podcast by Andara. I'm Yael Ginsberg. Today we have an episode that I actually recorded about 6 months ago when I was in Mexico at Yandara with Christopher Perkins, co-founder of Yandara. And as life goes, the episode is still and will always be very relevant to our lives, especially now. So for those of you who haven't met me before, I am Israeli. I live in Israel, and Israel is currently in a war. And the topic that Christopher and I chose was the topic of death and how do we deal with the inevitable part of life that is the death of loved ones, especially unexpected, premature deaths. And of course, as the nature of war goes, there have been a lot of deaths around me. Personally, I can speak people who I know through people that I know. I haven't lost anybody directly, thank God, but I know many people who have. And also, there have been many, many losses on the Palestinian side. And in general, as people who believe in the connectivity of all human beings, I understand that a loss of life is tragic no matter where it is. And yet, the people who are left behind, the people who stay, are the ones that have to manage with the loss. So this episode came out of a few tragedies that I witnessed or experienced prior to recording the episode, and that's what we talked about a lot. Now it's taking on a new meaning as I feel that my life is personally in danger, and the lives of my friends who are in combat. And it has given me a new perspective on things. As yogis, as spiritual people, we understand that in its essence, life is neutral. It is our interpretation that prescribes meaning to anything that we experience, including death. Because as we know, the only thing that we could discern is that death will happen, right? Everything moves and changes all the time. Every cycle begins and comes to an end. That is the only thing that we are certain of. And yet we are quick to prescribe the meaning of death being something bad or negative because of our limited perception of things. Christopher spoke about it in a really moving, beautiful, and well-rounded perspective. So I highly recommend that you take the time to listen. If you have experienced any loss recently, if you are dealing with the death of a loved one, or if you know somebody who is, please send them this episode. It might bring them some comfort and settling in this difficult time. Because this conversation happened 6 months ago, I've had time to implement what I learned from Christopher, and it has completely changed my perspective. I find myself sharing it with people whenever the topic comes up, and I know that it will make a difference in whoever ends up watching this episode. So without further ado, we'll dive into the episode. I'll just send out an invitation from my heart to yours. If you want to join our community, if you want to keep learning from the incredible teachers of Yandara and help us support this podcast, then please subscribe. Share this episode with somebody who will appreciate it, who needs to hear these words. It really makes such a big difference for us, and it helps us continue and provide you with free, meaningful, and heart-centered teachings. So we thank you in advance. We send you all our love, me and Yandara, and we hope you find meaning in this episode. Let's dive in.
The topic for today was actually requested by some of my friends because there have been a lot of tragedies that happened in recent months. The topic is an inevitable part of life, which is death. More specifically, it has showed up in my life and the lives of people around me in very tragic ways. The passing of my friend's brother, my friend who passed away from like a mental illness thing, tragic accident of a friend of a friend of mine where her whole family passed away, like terrible, horrible things. And I just thought you would be a good person to speak about this subject because, as we said, it is an inevitable part of life. We cannot avoid it. And yet, for some reason, it is harder for us to like accept when it happens in a younger age rather than in an older age. And it is a terrible thing that we have to deal with that completely transforms and changes our lives.
Yeah, you know, this is probably one of the most challenging for the Western mind because we are very interested in preserving and maintaining our comforts, and we've been quite successful at it in a lot of ways to preserve our sense of stability and maintaining our young looks with all kinds of products and everything that we can do to stay away from this, what you described as inevitable part of life, which is the decay of the body, the falling away. So thank you for bringing this. This is a super sensitive topic for people. So just you who are viewing this, I want to remind you that if this is something that's triggering to you, just take time. You can pause the video anytime and breathe. Pick it up at another time. And remember that anything that's said is in the context of this conversation. And if it doesn't feel supportive or appropriate, then take it as it comes, as a grain of salt, not necessarily as how you should be viewing it at this particular moment. Depending on where you are in the process of grieving, there are many different views that will be helpful along the way. But that doesn't mean that all of them apply at the same time. So a time and a place for each of these concepts that we'll talk about today. Okay. So first, I have experienced loss when I was quite young. So I lost my mother when I was 11. And that's a very uncomfortable experience as a child because you're still quite dependent on them to define or help define who you are in the world. So I have a unique experience from that perspective. Losing a parent early on is something a lot of people have experienced. So not unique in that regard, but unique in terms of most people at least grow up to some degree to maturity to see their parents pass. Not by any means all of them, but many. So loss to me has been a subject that I've studied a lot in my life, and I've gone into Buddhism quite deeply to understand a little bit more about how to effectively navigate loss.
Yeah, there's a lot of teachings there.
Exactly, yeah. Because they focus on, in the Heart Sutra, the Prajnaparamita is all about what's called emptiness. Mm-hmm. And emptiness is something that most people associate with the feeling of loss. There's something of an emptiness. And I'll just start with a basic concept of what emptiness is in this teaching is not nothingness. It's distinct. Nothingness is, well, something that doesn't actually exist. Here, emptiness means that it's empty of, there was something there and now it's not. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that there's nothing in its place. It just means that what we have identified as the space holder has left. Mm-hmm. So that could be as simple as a cup of your favorite drink getting knocked over by your cat. Mm-hmm. And you pick up the cup and you say it's empty. That doesn't mean it's empty. Mm-hmm. Of anything valuable. It just means that it's empty of what I was previously attached to or identified or hoping to continue my relationship with. Mm-hmm. So the cup is not full of nothing. Because if I was to approach it as a scientist, I would look at the cup and say, okay, it's an interesting container. It's letting air in. So it's full of something that we call air, oxygen, hydrogen, mm-hmm. Nitrogen. We have all these different elements that might show up in there. So oxygen and hydrogen for us means life. If we don't have air or oxygen and hydrogen together in the appropriate mixture, then we don't live. So for me to look at the cup and get very distraught is normal. It's natural. It's a process of grieving what that was previously, mm-hmm. To then hopefully shift our perspective to pay attention to what's actually in that space that's left behind.
Okay.
So in that space, we find what's more valuable than the tea, which is air. I can live without water or tea for probably a week, but without air, mm-hmm. it's a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
So this is what I'm describing as an analogy for the transition between a focus on what I'm attached to, what I hold dearly to, mm-hmm. to the process of investigating now what's in that space that's been left behind. And that's the healing process. Mourning. I mourn mm-hmm. the loss so that I can integrate what's there in its place. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a time thing for most of us. It's a matter of just being patient and having the natural human experience move through us. It does also include some responsibility to what our role is in that, because our thoughts will determine how much time we spend in a state of suffering, in a state of self-perpetuating grief that's not necessarily part of the healing process, because we can get locked into a grief cycle.
Yeah, I think there is a part of the grief that is really out of our control. I think mourning is a natural response of the body that if you don't allow it enough space, it will come out anyway. Like you exactly. have to take that space.
Exactly.
But you're saying like there's a length to that is mm-hmm. healthy, and beyond that, it is not.
Yeah, exactly. Like beyond that, it might be just simply a lack of education mm-hmm. for ourselves to be educated as to what is actually going on here. What's the process? What am I coming up against here? This spaciousness, this emptiness that Buddha spends so much time bringing up into the light, this emptiness. Mm-hmm. And emptiness is like a room also that's empty. You can think of, if you go to get a hotel room, you walk up and they say, we have an empty room here. As soon as you say yes and you walk into the room is now
full.
Full. Exactly. So We want to talk about the transition from being outside the room, looking at that space as empty, as mm-hmm. missing something. There's a void, there's a loss, there's a feeling of vacuum. Mm-hmm. And that is what you're talking about as the appropriate natural human or biological mourning process. And many animals mm-hmm. will be observed to yeah. go through that time as well. Obviously, if I get looped into a cycle of being addicted to the... The powerlessness. Maybe I'm caught into a belief that it shouldn't have happened that way, that yeah. people are, that I start to point my finger at what situational events or people shouldn't have been like that. You know, the whole, who's to blame? That's mm-hmm. going to become what I mean as the unhealthy part of getting stuck in the emotional yeah. cycles.
Okay. Just quickly going back to your analogy of the glass that spills.
Yes.
What are you... analyzing.
So the analogy of the cup being full is having that person in my life. Mm-hmm. They bring me nourishment. I enjoy the fragrance. They quench my thirst when I feel mm-hmm. that I want some of that
connection.
Exactly. So if when the cup is knocked over and you know the form dissipates, the form of the shape of the cup is no longer, and the water dissipates, either goes into a gas form, and we can talk about what that means in terms of spirit or in terms of it pouring back into the ocean if it enters into the field, as energy is neither created nor destroyed. We can trust that whatever essence is in that cup as our beloved one will naturally expand out into the reintegration, the original source. And we can talk about reincarnation and how some or most traditions believe that that energy is not only is it not destroyed or created, but energy is always changing forms. So if when the body is spilled back or the life force is spilled back into the mystery, we say, oh, it's just gone forever. That might leave us with a certain feeling. And if you believe that that is what's happening and it brings you a sense of peace, then that's probably helpful and appropriate for you to believe. Or if you believe that that particular essence pours back into the ocean, creating a ripple and a potential for another wave of life in a future situation, and it brings you a sense of peace, perfect. Whatever it is that you feel like, okay, life is doing what it needs to do. That'll help to relax some parts of ourselves so that we can enter into the next phase, which is looking into the cup to see what is actually left. So what is here? What is the value of that? First of all, you could say, for me, as a value would be meditating on loss, because losing someone at a very young age is traumatic, you mm-hmm. know? And so that was something that I learned was part of my signature story about why I teach about connection versus attachment. Mm. And seeing
what
that.
What do you mean?
So attachment being the wish that that person, for example, makes me happy, that they, you know, I'm attached to them being in the physical form. I'm attached to them acting a certain way and mm-hmm. like that. Whereas connection would be the knowledge internally that I am sharing something with them, mm-hmm. regardless of whether they're in form or not. I'm also essentially spirit, you could say, or I'm essentially pure consciousness.
And that can be also relevant if the person is still alive.
Definitely.
Right? You don't yes. have to have them in your vicinity in order to know that you have a connection with this person.
Exactly. And so one connection that we can have is called love. So love is something that I could say, if you've lost someone recently, I could ask you what it was like. What do you remember about them? Well, at the end of the day, what I really want to know is, how do you feel about them? What is the feeling that comes up inside of you when you consider what they've brought to your life? So if it's a good feeling, like I said, maybe a sense of joy or connection or something like that you gained when you're in their presence, then if we can pay attention to that, so that's going to be looking into the emptiness. So there's a spaciousness there. There's a void. But if we look into it, what is essentially still here? What has filled the space that we weren't aware of when we were still attached to the body. The body, exactly. What we weren't aware of was that the essence of what they have brought to us, which is a sense of connection, a sense of love, a sense of shared experience, whatever that is, that will still remain because we're the ones that have been cultivating that as a notion of why we want to connect with them. It's in us. It moves us. So we know it's within us. Mm-hmm. So if I can ask you, how do you feel when you think of that person? What happens inside of you? How do you feel about that person? Do you care about them? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you'll have another awareness arising of something that's not limited to the body or even them physically being here. So mm-hmm. then we start to gain mastery over our mind, which can easily slip into the victim or the egoic version that always sees itself as a separate, unique, completely independent thing. We are unique, but there are also aspects that are universal. And so if we can pay a little bit more attention in those moments when we're starting to bridge that gap between suffering and normal mourning into the evolution and to the deepening and gaining the gifts of that experience, it will be something like that shift. What is inside of me when I think about them? If I really just care about them, what happens? And as soon as I feel something, then I can relate to them directly. Mm. Because their physical body doesn't determine whether or not love is present. Mm. We've been able to love people that have been dead for many, many, many years. We can still love them. We can love them even more so sometimes because we let go of the differences that their body represents.
Yes.
And that can be a gift. Like I mentioned, the sacred air that we found in the cup, that most essential and life-giving quality that's present when the body is, you know, given back to the ocean. Mm-hmm. We're given access to that original essence, or at least it's made more potentially more available to us.
Yeah. For somebody who's in the mourning phase.
Yeah, the initial stages of loss and feeling unsettled and ungrounded and not sure how to define themselves, perhaps without that person physically in their lives. And
And I would say like there's this heaviness that overflows your whole being.
Yes.
That you honestly, you can't get away from, but I don't know if you should or want to get away from it.
No,
like it just,
exactly.
It just is there.
Yeah.
In that space.
Yes.
Is there something that can give a hand?
Absolutely. You just nailed it. So when you said the hand, the helping hand, for us to integrate that process, for us to sort of receive the benefits perhaps of that experience. I would call that emotional gravity that you're describing. Mm-hmm. You talked about as heavy, which in yogic terms is apana, the downward movement. Mm-hmm. So apana is the natural process of moving, cleansing, letting go or letting be. In this context, it's emotional. So we have the emotional gravity of bringing us back down into the, you could say the more and more universal, the more and more fundamental, and the more universal it is, the more intimately or the more deeply we can connect to that person or the energy of that person. So the helping hand, you could say, or the benefit of trusting the downward, trusting the weight and really going for it is that it will bring us closer to the bridge between physical and subtle. Mm-hmm. Between the gross form of the body and the unseen essence that person might have shared with us in those moments of beauty, you know, that love, that presence. So I believe that mourning is going to last as long as it needs to for us to get the message to come into our more subtle identity so that we can, I could say we want to accompany them. We want to meet them along that transition between physical and subtle. And in that, there's no loss. There's a more, even more meaningful relationship being built. So if we can get to the subtlety of that based on the gravity of emotion bringing us down, like in a positive way, like, yes, thank you for bringing me home. That depth of subtlety is the gift. And we will feel more centered and we will feel more receptive if we trust, which our society hasn't given us a lot of tools to trust, that the down during these moments is actually to our benefit.
Yeah.
It's tremendously helpful for us to be able to be present and to not be up into shoulds and shouldn'ts.
Yeah.
You know, oh, he shouldn't have been in that situation. That person shouldn't have,
Or I should have.
I should have, exactly. I should have been able to do more.
Yeah.
If I hadn't have done this, then they wouldn't have been that. Mm. Oh my God. Like a myriad of possibilities that we can start adding onto our ego to say it should have been different.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be found up here. So the drawdown has all the benefits of getting us out of that realm of shoulds and shouldn'ts and into the perfection of presence. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a benefit, and you nailed it when you said the helping hand, because I feel like it is. It's a grace that lets us integrate back into our essence, into our centered presence. And when I say essence, I mean there's a consciousness, there's a presence that person's existence was able to contain for a while. You know, it was a form like we talked about the cup. The water takes the form of the cup.
Mm-hmm.
Same with consciousness. If you have the container or the temple or the vessel of your body, we're able to, this is an interface, you know, this is like the interface to that subtlety of that essence.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, if the body falls away and I want to meet them at that essential level, I want to let my own consciousness enter the essential level, which is not going to be up here in the thinking mind. It'll be either down into the heart space and then expand from there. Or some people, depends on how grounded they are in their daily life, they might just feel it as an expansion and an opening from the center out, which is different than the thoughts kind of dispersing in little stories. That's not what I'm talking about. When I talk about opening from here out, it's more of a consciousness. You might call it psychic intuition or something like that, where we can begin to sense the subtlety of consciousness in its disembodied form. And then when we have that, we can maybe even have conversations that are healthy and balanced and ask, is there anything that you hadn't told me? Is there anything that I should, that you would want me to do right now? And having a relationship with them from that can be very, very helpful for people. For example, what would my past mother want me to be doing now? And if I tune into that from here, so first
here
grounding.
Meaning the third eye?
The third eye, exactly. And that third eye is it's a receptivity. You could call it psychic receptivity. Mm-hmm. And when I say psychic, I'm not talking about like reading people's minds and things like that. I just mean the subtlety of our mind's capacity to perceive beyond our own limited addition.
Perception.
So that is what I mean. It's like a field consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
Comes through from meditation practice or any kind of contemplation or even extreme like traumatic events can help people have like near-death experiences, things like that loosen their grip on the individual and physical and reveal the subtlety of the conscious mind or the psychic field. And that's where we meet them. So what would you say if you had someone who's passed and they were here, what would you want to ask them?
Well, actually, I have an interesting story to tell.
Hey, I'm quickly interrupting the episode to extend an invitation. If you are interested in deepening into any of the subjects we talk about on the podcast, we offer many different experiences on our beautiful grounds here in Baja, Mexico. From 9-day modules such as sound healing and yoga nidra, to breath and meditation, as well as 200 or 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, and many different shorter retreats. Check out our website, yandara.com, to see all the information about the different experiences. Let's get back to the episode.
I think I mentioned this. A friend of mine died a year and a half ago. She was my commander in the army. We were very close, and yet we were not in daily contact. And I, about 6 months ago, it was her like anniversary of the day that she died.
Mm.
And there was this whole ceremony and a memorial. We went to the cemetery. There was a thing in a synagogue afterwards. Like, it was really beautiful ceremony. And of course, we all connected with her, with each other, over in our grief and in her memory. And then the next day, I was at my house, and I was kind of, there was something that I wasn't clear about and I needed guidance on, and something that I needed help with. So I took like a deck of cards that I have, and I have it for many, many years. I sat with the deck and I actually spoke directly to her, and I said, Liori, I need help. Guide me through these cards. And then I opened three cards, and one of the cards that I opened was, it said, like, it in these words, "Don't be sad that I'm no longer here in my human form. I have moved on to a better place. I'm here with you." And it was like, I don't remember exactly the words, but it was about, like, it was her. It was her who sent me this card. Like, I can't, it, there's no other way to explain this. Like, I spoke directly with her, and a card that I have never seen before in this deck showed up, like,
wow.
So
very well explained how you opened to her. Thank you for doing that. Wow. And how did you feel when you recognized that the veils were thin enough at that moment that you could receive and exchange?
Honestly, to this moment, like, I'm holding back my tears right now. Like, it's incredible to think how our connection and our access to each other is so much closer than we can even imagine. Like, when I'm trying to articulate it and put it into words, like, for me, all I need to do is, like, metaphorically reach an arm out, and I feel like she's there and I can touch her.
Wow.
You know, like,
yeah.
In a way, she's closer to me now than when she was in her body.
Yeah.
And also just knowing that I can communicate with her, and that she's guiding me and helping me. Like, I think I've heard somebody say this, but it's so true. Like, now I have an angel that I can name.
That's beautiful. Wow. So you clearly have trusted to look into the emptiness of the space where she would occupy in your heart and find her. That's such a beautiful example. I think anybody who's watching this, hopefully will get the message that there's so much here beyond the initial grief. There's so much to look forward to. To help, to have that loving connection be as strong as you just described it is a gift. I mean, so thank you for sharing that. It's really special. And we can talk about the death process as being the loss of something, but you've just described it as being the revealing of something, the falling away of what wasn't needed anymore to reveal what's next. And this is the nature of reality. You know, it's always in its process of revealing what's next. And I think if you and I are sitting here thinking about a person who's passed and giving them permission in our own mind body to pass, to change, to go through whatever stages of disembodiment and, you know, expansion or returning to their, I don't want to speculate, but if we can give that process our hearts and lean into it, then we gain access to whatever they have access to. And that is something of a gift, to have that bridge, that angel.
You know, but like, as I'm sitting here and you're speaking, like, I feel myself like I feel the emotions coming up, and and what I'm wondering is like, if I feel so settled in this knowing, why does that bring that up for me?
Well, and you know, the word emotion, we can think of it just simply as emotion or energy in motion. Energy moving is what keeps us alive. Mm-hmm. And our society doesn't maybe support that as a normal. So in order for us to function in society and keep ourselves sort of put together, we judge the energetic movement that can manifest as tears or sounds or expression, which as far as I can see is the healthiest natural way to process the experience of life. Mm-hmm. Like a little baby, you know, they breathe, they allow, they flow, they bounce, you know, everything's moving and transitioning and changing all the time, and they're with that process. So
yeah.
I see it as a beautiful and natural result of you touching into your more connected being. So there's nothing that I would say is an issue with being moved by the spirit of what you're saying.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's not culturally supported, but that doesn't mean that it's something out of place. It's exactly. Yeah.
Meaning that it's not like sadness. It's just being moved by the energy of the emotion. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, as human beings, we have certain parameters or certain capacities for experience of that energy. And that energy has a certain momentum and a certain breadth and a certain power. And if we are resistant to a certain degree, then to that same degree, we will feel uncomfortable. And if we are open and allowing and trusting that life is always having its best sort of best go at it, you know, like if we get out of the way, the body will do a certain thing. It'll breathe, it'll cry, it'll do whatever it has to make the best possible outcome. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, it's on our side. Our body, our emotions, our hormones, it's generally exactly as it needs to be. If we're not getting in the way and resisting it so much, it has a really good plan for dealing with this. So one of the ways that we can become less dramatic, you might say, in our feeling of that depth is to allow, to practice the allowing.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I think that is a huge problem in our society, that we're taught to push down the emotions that are coming up and resist this energy that is in motion. I would love to hear you speak about that.
Well, society is geared towards production or making sure that we're progressing in our whatever it is. And that requires us to show up for the 9 to 5, for example, production. And the way I see it, the society built on, you could say, consumerism requires us to show up at a certain way, in a certain way, to get the job done. To get the job done. And everything starting from early on in school says that if you lose your ability to get the task completed because of a desire or because of a feeling or because of a movement of energy that's so naturally built in to keep us.
Yeah, because of being a human.
Because of being.
Basically.
Exactly. We have a lot of intelligence built into us, which gets trained out of us pretty early on by the structures that most Western societies will put on education. Yeah. And so for me, it has a lot to do with unlearning.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of allowing will put us in an uncomfortable situation in a workplace, for example.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone is expecting us to have it together, then we're going to either, if we find that we're unable to process it like that, we'll find a way to distract ourselves. We'll find a way to suppress. We'll find whatever entertainment or whatever form of suppression, whether that's through addiction or any disassociative tendencies. When I talk about addiction, I'm not just talking about substances. I'm also talking about thought, just addicted to fantasy, addicted to any number of things that is going to help us get a distance from the power and the incredible benefit of natural flow.
Mm.
That is So that's a hard one because our natural flow state isn't going to fit in so easily sometimes to the expectations that are put on us. Mm-hmm. So either we have to be willing to sacrifice a little bit our comforts and go with the flow, you know, or I should say, either we sacrifice our greatness and stay in the structure of it should be like this. I have to keep it all together all the time, not let anybody know. Or I take a risk and lay my cards on the table as you did to see what comes. And when you spread those cards and you say, okay, what's next? It might be tears. It might be laughter. It might be a little bit of a, you know, an alternative route. But, you know, if we're not in the environment that supports that, we're going to quickly disregard it.
Yeah, I think you brought up a really important point that it's really like inability or fear from the power that we have, the greatness that we hold within us. Because if we always numb ourselves and find a way to avoid the power that we have inside of us, which can come in any different form, whether it's an emotion or creativity or urges or, you know, like any sort of bursts of creation that want to come out of us, and we push it down in order to conform, in order to, because I need to be working on what my boss told me to work on from 9 to 5, which is basically the whole day. You know, then there is no space for anything else.
Exactly. And even if you don't have a 9 to 5 a job situation, we may have been trained when we were 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, very young, through the education system, that even if we're here, maybe you don't have a boss, those imprints and beliefs will still be dormant, potentially, until we investigate under the surface. So if you're interested in that investigation, inner child meditation, to see what risk are we not willing to take again by being that free, that powerful, that brave, that authentic. Because that would have been something we were experiencing at some point, and the result was something painful. Like if I said, hey, I want to go and play with my toys, and I'm in second grade class or whatever, and I got up and I went to play with the toys, and the teacher says in front of everybody, you know, Christopher, that's the last time I'm telling you, you cannot go play with the toys. Go to the corner, stand in the corner and look at the wall or whatever, or go to the office.
Yeah, what are you, a little kid?
Exactly. Yeah. It's time to be a big boy now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these messages land so quickly in a young person's psyche as,
a belief.
A belief, exactly. And it becomes a structure that makes me a appropriate, you know, piece of society, that I can control things to the point where I'm not just moved anymore by energy. I'm not just trusting the power of wisdom and intuition and the strides of my soul to manifest in this world. So this is not easy stuff to find, but when we can meditate on surrender, as I said, this ability to allow, we start to chip away at those conditions that allow what we're talking about today to be very efficient, which is the mourning process of loss of attachment.
Yeah.
So I'm not suggesting it should be faster than it is. I'm just suggesting that we can make it something that we allow rather than something that we resist. The reason is, if we resist, like on a roller coaster, have you ever ridden a roller coaster? That first drop. So I use this analogy sometimes because it's so powerful. When we're going down that first drop, if we start to resist that gravity, that draw down into the depths, if we had emergency brakes and we could pull those brakes on the way down, we'd slow our descent. We'd interrupt the natural gravitational pull, and we get down to the bottom and we get stuck there. And we sit there and we think, oh my God, this mourning process is taking years. What is wrong with me? Yeah. It's not that the process takes years. It's that we have spent years learning how to resist our natural ability to process. We spent years training ourselves to control, to hold back, to put the brakes on it at any inference that there's a call home, that there's a draw down to stay, to stay positive, to stay functional, to stay whatever it is.
Yeah.
Acceptable.
And I think that there is also this kind of, it's a term like toxic positivity.
Yes, exactly. Which is like spiritual bypass can be a form of,
that you're like, you're not letting yourself feel the emotions. So of course you're staying level, but that doesn't mean you're dealing with it. It means you're avoiding it.
Exactly. And this is a very internal process of checking. Mm-hmm. Has this been investigated? Have I given this permission? Have I let myself melt down into the natural rhythm of this cycle? And you're describing something that is really common amongst yogis, you know, having a really, you know, yogis are attracted to yoga because we're seeking reconnection. And we can also use that same philosophy to avoid our connection. Because I think, you know, spirituality is something that we're learning to, in the West, we're learning to make sense of through emotion, through therapy, basically, through emotional transformation, because that's what we need. I think the West is somehow, like you're describing, most of the time staying in a sort of toxic positivity to get through the day. Mm-hmm. So for us, as particularly as yogis, to trust that spirituality is not a cardboard cutout of philosophical, you know, those little snippets of it's all good and, you know, the universe is
good. Vibes only.
Yeah, good vibes only. These are terms that if they're happening, if it's true, then it is true. But if it's not, then it's just not.
Yeah.
You know, and that's important to let go of these philosophical sort of discrediting my own experience sayings.
Yeah, I think because so many people are going through things within themselves in a lot of spaces, not all spaces, but in a lot of spaces, there is no room for you to bring like the heavy stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
When you're not feeling great. So even when somebody's asking you, how are you? They don't really want to hear the answer.
Right. Very common hello would be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that you should bring everything to every place, but we are encouraged to like be positive and like be good most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And obviously that's not the case. I think the conversation is changing on that, but it's not the case all the time.
Yeah.
We're not always happy. We're not always good. We're not always in a good mind space or head space. We're just not. I want to ask you about navigating through that space because, okay, we've established the importance of allowing yourself to ride the roller coaster.
Yes,
I think that's a good analogy. How do we do it?
Yes. So as young people, we were given models and we were taught how to survive based on our parents, based on our peers, you know, how they made it through. So a lot of this has to do with unlearning those habits of not allowing, of not trusting, and you said navigating. So a new model can be that we are not our mind, we are not our emotions, we are not all the ride that we call, you know, my personality and my human experience, which has to do with right and left brain integration of what's happening. So like, for example, in our right brain, we have the feeling, emotional vulnerability, sensitivity. We have the ability to be moved, basically. Mm-hmm. And in the left brain, the ability to structurally view it for what it is and to disidentify from it so that we can actually be healthy in regards to managing it or, you know, seeing it for what it actually is. And both of those are essential pieces to processing and integration. But as children, we don't have necessarily that ability. We don't gain that intelligence necessarily until we become more mature. So as adults, now we can start to balance that. We can start to see that, okay, I'm philosophical. You know, we talked about these sort of positive worlds of seeing it's all good. What that's doing is that's tacking us onto the left brain activity, which is philosophical. There's a distance to it. There's a certain amount of safety in that. And mm-hmm. we're not going to be out of control. You know, like, so then the other side, the losing control, getting lost in the swirling vortex of darkness and clouds and getting swept underneath and dragged under like a wave, you know, just destroying our sense of self. And you could feel like you're drowning in it, you know. So,
yeah, losing control, I think, is a good description.
Yeah, totally out of control. Yeah. Which is essential.
Yeah.
It is essential that there's a part of us that we are not in control of, because if we were, well, which we try to be, we wouldn't know the best possible way to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not our job. Just like as a farmer, as a gardener, it's not my job to know how to grow an apple. I don't know. Do not put me in that position to try and assimilate all these different molecules and to figure out which ones go where and how cell growth and all these processes happen with the sun. You know, no.
Yeah.
I don't need to know that, and I don't want to pose the idea that I could know that, though it is built in genetically.
Yeah.
And if I trust it, boom, it happens.
And as the farmer, you need to make sure that you have the right conditions.
Exactly. That's what I'm in control of. That's the left brain. Yeah. What I'm talking about is, can I create an environment of healthy perspective and permission, hands off, to let the emotional movements happen.
Yeah. And also the space, I think, because you fill yourself up with meetings and, you know, activities and work or whatever, then you can easily coast by without feeling the depth.
Right.
But
definitely alone time helps with that. Scheduling some time in nature, because nature is also always reflecting that which I'm describing as the natural process. It's letting go of things. It's adjusting. It, you know, maneuvers itself to make the best of a situation as it arises, rather than getting attached to how it was or how it should be.
Yeah.
And for me, one of the most important ways to integrate this emotional journey is physical awareness in the body of the left and right side of the body. And using that, this is actually based on EMDR, which is scientifically researched, and it's been proven to give people with PTSD the ability to balance and become less overreactive, like less trauma arises when, for example, a loud sound happens. They can hear the sound rather than just hear their past trauma coming up. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways is, like, through yoga, it's left and right stimulation of the body through different postures, through rotations. EMDR uses the eyes. So looking left and looking right, which stimulates the different brain hemispheres consecutively. Mm-hmm. So making a physical contact on the left and then the right, a physical contact on the left leg, the right leg, left finger, right finger, has the natural, scientifically proven effect to stimulate both hemispheres of the brain consecutively to create that balance that we as adults are equipped with if we're not lost in fear of the emotion or attachment to the control that the left brain offers us.
Yeah, so physically balancing both sides of the body.
Yes, and particularly stimulating. Left and right, left and right consecutively. Mm-hmm. This is a therapeutic approach to giving emotion a place to be and giving the perspective that it's, that will help it to process more naturally. Mm. Now, like anything, that technique can be overused. It can, you know, it doesn't mean that just because it's helpful, you should always do it, because it is like taking like an aspirin. It is anti-inflammatory.
Mm.
It lowers the intensity of the experience so that we can become present and work with it healthily. Mm-hmm. So if we are overwhelmed by that roller coaster ride and we're just like getting lost, then that's when we ought to apply something. Mm-hmm. And so soft, deep breaths. And it looks like this, just to demonstrate it. It's a touch until I feel sensation. And as soon as I feel sensation, I want to release it.
Mm-hmm. He's touching index finger and thumb in the left hand.
And then I want to trace a line all the way to the other hand and touch index and thumb on the other hand. As soon as I feel consciously that there's a sensation, I release that touch. And like I'm tracing with a laser up the arm, cross the heart, down the other arm, touch the other one. So if you think of it like a ping pong match, there's one touch. Mm. And the ball doesn't stay on the paddle. It just touches. Mm. And as soon as it leaves the paddle, it travels and then it touches.
Yeah.
So traveling, touch, traveling, touch. And the touch should be conscious. And it's important that it's a wholehearted attention on that physical sensation, because that's what is going to integrate us with the process that's required for healing, which is presence in the body, because all the hormones that are being sent into the body to process or to give us signals of how to be safe won't be able to create safety until we've arrived in present time and assessed the current situation, which is fine, actually. Mm-hmm. Usually it's quite fine. So, for example, in a loss situation where someone's, we've lost a family member or a loved one, as soon as we come into presence, then not only can we see that it's actually okay, I'm okay, I have both my arms, even though I might feel emotionally like I've lost my left side or my right side, depending on how that person showed up for us, I will also have access to what you described earlier, which is the essence of them, because I'll be able to be present in my own essence, but it only happens in present time. So a lot of these emotional roller coaster rides are fueled, the intensity is fueled by the attachments of thoughts in the, of the past or projections of what it could be like in the future, worst case scenario, for example. And that's what fuels kind of the, what I said, the unhealthy version of mourning, where it goes on into this cycle of just getting lost and shoulds and shouldn'ts and like that. So to get into present time through this technique of stimulating left and right brain or physical body to get left and right brain hemispheres balanced, then we're able to become aware of what the feelings are. And through that, it's like shining a light on a boogeyman. What happens when you shine your flashlight on the actual boogeyman? It disappears. There's no actually thing there, which is the future. The future isn't here. The past isn't here. I shine light on the experience and it's actually fine. I'm actually generally going to be looking around and realizing this is workable. I can work with this. And that's an important foundation to move from into the process of healing, that this moment is actually okay. I don't have to get concerned about what should or shouldn't have happened, because the law of cause and effect was still in play. Meaning the law that decides each manifest moment is at play for every single event. Cause, effect. This is a basic law of physics that has not, that shows up everywhere in the known universe. Everywhere is governed by law of cause and effect. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And that goes into infinite pieces to that puzzle. So I won't know all the causes. I won't know all the conditions. I don't have to. For me to be at peace, all I have to know is that there were causes and conditions that could not have been any other way because of the previous causes and conditions for this event to have occurred like that, exactly like that. So for me to argue with that was simply, that would be like me saying, I know better than the universe and the intelligence that ruled the, you know, that's ruling the universe. You call it God or call it the law of cause and effect. It doesn't matter. For me to say it shouldn't have happened that way, I could have done more. All these things is to literally argue with the universe itself to say, you're wrong, I'm right. And that is going to cause friction and internal stress, which causes drama in emotional processing. It gets more and more dramatic. It's like putting gasoline on a fire. So we first have to come into presence through these techniques to let those types of thoughts subside. Then we can start the natural healing process of connecting with that the essential connection of love. So we've got this.
Wow.
That's a lot of words.
Yeah, this is harder than I thought it was going to be.
Tell me about where you feel stuck, because someone else probably feels the same thing.
My friend that I spoke about, Lior, her mother lost two children. Mm. Her Lior's older brother died 10 years earlier than that in an accident. Mm-hmm. To Orna, Lior's mother, I don't see, like, for her, she had to get past the death of her child one time already. Mm. And now when she has to do it a second time, I don't know what words can console her. And I don't know if for her to think about the present moment, the answer that she gets is that everything is okay, because not everything is okay. Even if she understands the law of cause and effect and that it had to be in this way. Mm-hmm. Even if she chooses life and she has done it before and she's trying to do it again.
Yeah.
There is no words that can describe the horrible situation that she is in.
Of course, of course. Yeah. It doesn't mean, though, that there isn't adjustment that can occur. So there's always a little adjustment that can occur for her to allow that process to flow. And there's obviously no way that, if you haven't been through that, there's no way that I can know what that's like. And there's no words, as you say, that she would be able to hear that would make it okay. I don't mean to suggest that. But what I do mean to say is that if and when she's ready to seek an alternative to continuing to suffer, that she can apply a little bit of technique to help her allow a little bit more deeply the letting of reality be what it is. Because the suffering is the argument against reality, that it shouldn't have happened like this. Mm-hmm. That's suffering. Pain is different. Pain is a natural and normal side effect. So there's two things. One is the pain that we try to avoid by thinking that it, you know, thinking helps us get away from the pain. And usually when we're thinking, things are going to get weird. Like, mm-hmm. it shouldn't have happened. How is this possible? Nothing. You know, why me? There's no God if this is, you know, happening. It doesn't matter. All that stuff's going to be up above the neck. All the thinking about this is going to cause tremendous prolonged suffering to believe that that process is going to get you anywhere. So at some point, hopefully sooner than later, she'll get so exhausted by her own process of arguing with the facts that she will, and if she hasn't already, hopefully she will soon, let herself just be drawn into the absolute dark night of the soul and trust that will take her closer to the essence that we've been talking about, the connection and love that she has for her kids. That connection is essential, that she stays with that versus the attachment to what they were. That is a huge and important distinction that she'll have to come to grips with, that she's choosing. She has to make the choice at some point. No one can tell her when that's going to be. Of course, she's the only one. In order for her to get there, she has to get so sick and tired of being, you know, that sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, that is something that each person will decide in their own way based on the support they have and their own history and their patterns of how to deal with situations. But in the meantime, if she gets into her body, does healthy exercise, maintains her physical body as a temple, it will naturally show her when it's time. It'll show her, you know. So
how does one release attachment?
By focusing on something that's more true, which is connection. Focusing on what's true. The truth is that she is connected. Attachment is an idea and a belief that it should be this way still when it's not. It's not true. It's just simply not the case. Attachment is the idea or wish that is different. usually. Mm-hmm. Or you could say the idea or wish that it will stay the same, which is definitely not true. We know nothing stays the same. So there's attachment, which is going to, suffering. And we can see it. We can see it. If we really pay attention, what is that that causes us this feeling? So if I say, for you, say if you're in her situation, and if I said to you, what could you have done? Like, what could you have done to avoid this situation?
She could not have done anything.
Right, exactly. But in her mind, she probably has entertained this idea that she could have done something differently. She should have done something differently. So her attachment in that situation would be that she has some power to know the future or whatever it is she's attached to, some idea that she could have done it differently. And it's just not the case. It's just she did the best she could, as we all do all the time. Not that we're doing some ideal thing, but we're doing the best we can. So I don't know what's causing her particular process to linger, to go longer in the suffering. Pain is normal. Pain is natural. But we can live and manage pain. But suffering will eat us up.
I'm not sure if she's in the pain or the suffering, I have to say. But
probably a mixture of both,
Yeah.
I would say one of the fastest ways is to focus on what her daughter and her son would say to her if they could speak. Mm-hmm. If they could speak, what would they tell her to do? How would they want her to be moving through the world? And that is going to get them closer to what you described in your interaction with your friend, with the cards. Because that shift to being here in the present and focusing on what is still here rather than what we wish was still here, that's truth. That's the part where we can actually evolve and grow and not just get lost again.
Yeah. What I kept thinking about when I was going through the grieving process, not that it's ever over, I think, because even now speaking about it, like I feel pretty overcome with emotion, was the meaning of her life. Mm. And because you can't, like, it's, you ask why does...
Yes, you ask why. And then...
No, you ask why, like a 29-year-old beautiful girl with an amazing future in front of her.
Yeah.
Why does her life end in that moment? There's nothing you can come up with.
Right.
There's no reason.
You can take that question to your grave. It'll drive you insane.
And when I was thinking of like the meaning of her life and just me personally, how much she helped me while we were in the army together and like her being my direct commander. And I was like, I had special conditions because of my family situation. Like I really needed her help in a lot of things. And she was so there way more than she should have been. Like she invited me to dinner at her mother's house. Like it was way more than she had to do. And just having like, she meant so much to me, especially in that time of my life, which was difficult. It was very difficult. Like my dad kicked me out of the house and I needed somebody and she was so there. Yeah. And that gave me some comfort.
Beautiful. Yeah. And can you feel where that hits in the body, like where that lands, that feeling of her beauty? The reason I'm asking is very specific, because above the neck, thinking versus integration through the roots, the underground yoga, which is where she exists in you and as everything that we share, then you have the harmony that you're seeking called healing. It's for sure a movement. It's a movement, but it's not an emotional tidal wave. It's a movement from the realm of distance and differences to the realm of universal connection. Mm. And it's just a direct path. And so one of my teachers, actually, Babaji, would, when I asked him, what's the most important teaching, he would just go like this. He'd look at me like, you're up here. And then he would just go like, Mm-hmm. This is where we get the most beautiful wisdom from, is just below the neck, as deep as you can in presence. And the truth is there, which is that you are connected. I'm not suggesting you should think that. I'm suggesting curiousness. How would it feel to know that right now? Like literally feel yourself travel down into the roots, into the field, into the depths of the ocean, which is way beneath the waves of emotion. It's deeply rooted in, and you might be moved by it. That's perfectly normal. But the feeling, truth, is that there's nothing missing. She's more here, like you said, than ever. That's the fact, is that when we check in, actually, whatever we felt valuable about this person is so much more deeply available now than it ever was when I was distracted by their physical happening.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? If you let yourself deep down into that root connection.
Yeah, but you know what else that brings up for me? Like how sometimes we may feel insignificant or unimportant or unworthy, or, you know, all of these things that we so easily get caught up in, and how much meaning we actually do have in the maybe even small ways that we touch other people's lives.
Is that coming up as you explore how it feels down in that sort of realm of connection?
No, it's coming. It's coming from remembering like the meaning of her being here, which is the opposite of what you're saying. But
so that's a beautiful thing, because it'll move you, right? It'll bring some emotion, I hope. And that means that you're starting to feel gravity again. So the thoughts of what you're grateful for and what she's meant, they link directly into a movement of emotion that will give you a trail back down below the neck. So where do you feel that movement of how much you cared about her, how much value?
Feel it like the solar plexus.
Well, if you allow your attention to go all down, all your mind, your thoughts, your everything to go down into this area. Nowhere else, just there. Just flowing down through that area, either straight down or down and out. Does she feel further or does she feel closer?
She's right here. She's in the room recording with us, obviously.
Okay. And when you allow that connection, is there anything missing? Is there any mourning? Is there any loss? If she's here in this room, is there any suffering or struggle if she's here now? No. Is that okay? Do you deserve to live in harmony with her love?
Yeah.
I'm asking you because many people don't believe that they should get to live in harmony and in love if someone else's life was taken. Mm. If someone else's life was taken, then I should feel guilty for living? No. You should feel connected and living with her, with that support. Yeah. You know, that's what she is here for now. The meaning of her life now is not in the physical, but it's still life.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I see her serving this moment, to be present with you and to give you a truth that's not going to end up being found up here. That's what I would say is probably the most effective process to get through the ride, is to get below the neck and feel the truth of what's occurring, which is that she is absolutely right here with us.
Mm.
Anything else?
I was just about to ask you that.
Well, I just want to thank you for being so open and ready and willing to trust this topic, which is so personal to you right now. It's not easy. And I think a lot of people that are going to be watching this who've lost someone will understand how hard it is to make that transition from what we have been doing to how it can reveal a different experience.
Yeah. So maybe just as the last question, what would you say to people, or like how would you guide people to be there for others when they have lost someone? someone close to them.
Of course, yeah. So the most important thing is timing, making sure that we're not trying to rush or push or expect or to get the other person to not feel. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So most important when you're approaching someone who's going through these deep experiences is to let them be in their process without needing to try and get them out of it. And today I was asking certain questions about going deeper and connecting in a certain way because I can see that you're able to hold all of it. You're able to be with that and you're able to move internally and, you know, trust that connection that you have. But if someone's just recently lost the person and it's very fresh and it's sort of an acute reaction to trying to reorient themselves in the world, then it is just your natural compassion and your natural presence is enough. Letting yourself be moved with them. You know, taking the opportunity to have compassion, which means to feel of another person's passion, to feel of another person's experience, to be empathetic. And then little by little, if the person is receptive or curious, then you might bring up how maybe this podcast or your own experience has offered a perspective that if we can be present with the energy of how we feel about them, can be more important. If that can be more important than our attachments to how we think it should or shouldn't be, then we have the possibility to heal and live in harmony with that experience of loss rather than struggling and suffering. Because it is here for a gift. It is, as you know, it's a gift for us to live in harmony with. You said the mourning process is never over. I would say the love never dies. If we keep it alive,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a mourning process, but I don't think it ever dies.
I like that.
Keep the love alive.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Christopher, thank you so much for this.
Yeah, I hope it's supportive and helpful. And yeah, this is a big one, so.
Yeah.
Take it with, you know, with as much time and compassion as needed internally and, like you said, with others as well.
Mm.
So, yeah. I feel my heart going out to everyone who's experienced loss or currently in the process of trying to reorient with that. And I'll just say one last thing. You know, loss is happening every moment of every day. Loss is the fact that life is constantly changing. Life is a dance, arising and dissolving. All forms are in a constant state of change, completely interdependent, completely connected, and continuously revealing the next, falling away to reveal the next. So if we can identify ourselves as that as well, as part of nature as well, then we can begin to see others as part of that process as well. And then they become free to do them in nature, as nature. You know, we don't hold on so dearly to how we think they should be in the body. Yeah. And so if we see ourselves as that continuous change, we can give others the permission to be the same.
This is really a conversation about accepting that everything is always changing and evolving. And
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Christopher.
Now, after this time to nurture your mind and your spirit, we invite you to take a moment to consider others. A kind wish might come to mind. Know that what we learn becomes more valuable when we apply it and share it with others. So share this episode on Instagram stories, tag Yandara and I, or share with a loved one so that more people can benefit from it. Our hope is that the search will lead you home to who you already are, to what was always there. We'll be back next week with more inspiration, honest conversation, and insight into the energetic world around us. Thank you for listening and watching.